It started as a simple wall built with so much care, now intertwined with ivy grip defences and opinion stick, and finally justify their rights to block out all the light. A pernicious mildew of precious stones that screen detention and still do. Clever windows of stained glass lead directly to their vast expanse of light and space. I go there to dispel into its coloured emptiness this tangled mess, and stay where there are no footprints to be trampled on and the ivy grip is gone. Thank you.
Good job. We move on quickly, Charles. Thank you.
Opening paragraph part two of a short story about a priest's horse. Many years ago, a farmer on good land in County Cork owned a young horse called Jack. It was a good place near the sea, and the farmer was married, but there were no children. Life was pleasant for Jack. The grass was good, and he spent most of the year in the open air. Unfortunately, the farmer drank and had to sell up. All the stock was sold at the fair in Clonakilty. The farmer moved to the outskirts of Dublin, where he lived in the gate lodge of a convent where he farmed the land. When he died some years later, he was buried with his wife. Jack was excited at the fair. The noise, the movement, the other horses were beyond his experience. Ireland's most successful maker of hunters at that time was George Ham Russell, and he was there. He did not usually buy in Clonakilty, but he was staying in the area, and he thought he might as well take a look. His eye Jack caught his eye. He was young, strong, had a good head, and though not perfectly conformed, he seemed worth a try. Ham, as he was always known, played a good price, so everyone was happy.
So next up is Rob.
You're ready.
Some of you may have heard this, especially you. Quad psychology. We get our hopes and fears from the parent of the same sex, and our way of dealing with the world from the parent of the opposite sex.
Me? Mike, sorry, yeah, I was doing the thing with here. Sorry, like that.
Thanks.
I have three quick little ones about women.
They're
relatively short. I didn't have a bit of biting satire tonight, I left it behind, so I was after writing home about being vanilla, so these are three vanilla poems actually. But Solo, this is my sister, she's a bit lost after her husband. Solo, I got through the whole day today. Yes, I did. Won't you be proud? I didn't reach for the phone or text you when alone. I just spoke to you aloud. I checked the drills, the tunnels, the bills. I looked for a plumber on the golden pages. And I gazed at the same sun setting behind the hills and looked for a robin for ages. Yes, I sat in the patio too in the warming, balmy evening. And I sipped at the pineapple overtone notes of Australian wine near beneath the awning. So I've been an excellent girl and I cope without your affirmation. But come the night when I turn out the light, well, that's a whole different equation. And this is about me, when I was young. Little Miss Lefty. That's my partner. So avant-garde, so soignée, she's really out there in her challenging way. Father Amaco was on her limb, her bijou on the left bank, against the current she swims. Books full of Camille Paglia, Marilyn French and Germaine Greene. She really hates all tedious bores and her sights are on exotic shores. But give her babies and a house to clean and she'd pull the floor up like a good slavey. And this is just her poor old peaches, because I was a fet. A peach by any other name could not hold such colour. Gentle grace, a delicate face, the shape and texture of an almond. Left at 8, bereft at 11, but my mum lost to a strange heaven. Ophelia's bride, smiling mother for a while, now resting each peach trees from life's glamour. Okay. Thank you, Morgan.
Next on the list is Simon Aronson.
Oh, let's go for a trio then that I wrote a little while ago. If I can find it. Okay, this is called Trio then. I am become new focus man, my world adapting to how I am, coping with difference as well balanced people can. I am become a clean focus man. The mess, the dirt my vision did not scan, now becomes the focus in which new light to ground. I am become new focus man, my world adapting to how I am. Can I define the reasons evolving to me now? Influences around me that led to the breakthrough. Damming up the feelings cool, causing self to scrape and bow. Can I define the reasons evolving me to now? The wealth of squelched emotion, fear of conflict here kowtow. Each shall be given their respective due. Can I define the reasons evolving to me now? Influences around me that led to the breakthrough. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Simon. Next on the list is Dan.
Thanks, Julie. A while back, I was sitting down the back there with Billy Ramsey one night discussing this thing I do where I take sound titles from artists and write pieces from me. He said, oh my God, there's so many people you could even do Leonard Cohen. And I took a very deep breath and said, oh, I don't know if I'd ever chance that. But about 2 weeks ago, I had to say to have a look, and then I got one line and thought, well, I have to finish it now. So this is a piece derived entirely from Leonard Cohen song titles. And because it's Leonard, it's very cheerful and bright and so no. It's never any good when darkness fingerprints the future and memories show me the place I was humbled in love. It's never any good when darkness fingerprints the future and the letters I tried to leave you butcher this heart without a companion. It's never any good when darkness fingerprints the future and everybody knows the traitor. It's never any good when darkness fingerprints the future and morning glory lullabies. You have loved enough, nothing to no one. Last year's man, is this what you wanted? It's never any good when darkness fingerprints the future, and by the river's dark and undertow anthems, I will take this longing if it be your will.
Conor McManus.
Sunday evening on Berwick Street. I stood in the doorway of Zamzam's full of writer's tears and looked down Berwick Street to the red door of the Brown Derby and saw your face. You look after yourself anyway, you said, when I told you I'd stepped in for a fry. How do you find these places, you said, and reminded me of our date in a greasy spoon in Hanwell where the mothers only drank fat coke. That was a lifetime ago, a daughter ago, far from Zamzam's, and fair from an empty Sunday evening on Berwick Street.
First poem I ever heard.
I didn't want to say anything, right?
Usually short story. Excellent short story. Big amount of Paul, can you say it too? Yeah.
I'm going to chance. I've been doing workshops with Dúirne Gréater recently, Irish language poetry workshops, right? The poetry workshops are pretty scantily attended, you know? There are few people in a poetry workshop. So you can imagine how many people you get in an Irish language poetry workshop. Cork City, right? So I don't have English translations for these yet, and they're probably not finished. Kine is ire. Ba iadson an gere is a sara, san shomra kena le chela. La awan ba ishan an uacht is isha an tias, san ched la ena a waart. Gaminic snahihinta vima imaha ivalak, is sais say shura ela. Achnaleanta Africa, Vian Rian Nagoni Aum, is Fiammer, Fear Emma. And then Bajigo Kraken. Vistadic Chats, the Kriha and Trimadora, Sonomic Kena, Kuname, and Chopper. Achvian Storm, Fos, Fos Ekbura, Iskara, Flocker de Vale, Saint Eir, Turum Leistic, Taedi Mora, Ura, and Shodit. Big Mabrian Gloid, Eglanuent, the Ruin, the Grinkes, and Barstach, Quin Tornach, Okrach, Furha, Furonach, the Dismisha, Turm, the Hua, Chine.
This is a poem called Me Lumino Dimenso, which is an Italian phrase for being awestruck. Literally it means I'm illuminated by the immensity. So Me Lumino Dimenso. Emblazoned electric lights streamed over the planet's crest, a system of splayed out rivers inflamed by floating orange fireflies, efflorescing upon currents having ensnared rare white fireflies within their flow. They all teemed on and off, burning and exhilarated. The white fireflies were being free of their freedom, the orange fireflies for what they stole. They swarmed between banks of black, gushing on to the ends of the earth. They looked as though, that looked as though it had been about to explode from a light inside it before stopping when caught in the act. Precise straight stalks of clouded pearl white light tipped one way and then the other, like the finger of a metronome trying with its tip to tickle the bright underbelly of the night's cloudless sky. Three sky-high stems rolled with the motion of the spine of a female dancer dipped. The plane around me banked. I felt held over the city below me as if within the palm of God. I gulped down still in the slow, sweet slipstream of the short, deep sleep evaporating progressively all around me. Playful fear fingered my gut, as if I was a child peeking over the edge of a top bunk bed during their first night in it. A child who feels more euphoria than terror for having done and felt something for the first time without knowing that it would not be their last. The plane stayed tipped to me. I imagined Atlas beneath adjusting his feet and bemoaning us above and all existence, laughing to himself sardonically like a child of Dostoevsky who had not yet learnt their lesson. Big Ben's tower looked capable of being plucked. I thought that I could reach down, prise it up and then use it to clean my teeth. The Royal Albert Hall had become a satsuma flavoured cake, and where Hyde Park had been there was now just a vast black hole. A bottomless crater of the purest dark that I thought from then on would draw endless trains of wandering tourists to its lip, who would wonder when they got there to the front of the line, why they had come at all and paid and queued and waited. For what? I saw them ask as they looked down, mistaking the magnetism of solidarity for misplaced spontaneity. believing their share of that to be autonomous as they log off into the twin of their limit to at least get their money's worth. Before the sun had set, I'd stood squinting under thick glass in the 4th of July. I'd watched as a distant lodestar budded and then began to grow, my mind suggesting and retelling evasive explanations for what was. Sunbeams became ensnared upon the topside of the miracle of one enlarging star moving to me from the cerulean blue that had bred it, as if with defiance and a lack of any intent to look or ever go back. Near me, a family huddled without any need to do so physically. The father's forearm resting on the blonde hairs on the back of his young son's neck, the mother smiling down upon her daughter's irrepressible and airy tail. The father and son and I looked on until I turned away again to a plump Boeing descending before another lodestar beginning to grow from where the last had been. The moon's sympathetic face still flanked our slow arcing flight line. It travelled on within the diluted reflection of my cheekbone and wide open eye, as swiftly as a lit wick rescinded. Below me, the rivers of incandescent fireflies had been transposed by the veins of a simple leaf, pumped full of moonlight, that due to the channels that it moved through looked a lot like lightning escaping at speed from its source. The wing over the city rose, a plane far off hung in the air. From the deep black it winked itself into existence for all that I knew. Another plane waited near, still within frantic inertia, like a hummingbird hovering, while with her swift wing tips, she invisibly, unknowingly, and countlessly inscribes the human symbol for infinity either side of her tiny, booming heart. Thin, blurred wings and jet blades turned and whirred in the black. When, as if a sudden revelation of what had always been, there was the great mystery, the mother and the reaper of all things. There within the Mayan of all cataclysmic catalysis. There within the perfectly balanced face of creation. There and everywhere she showed. I moved on through beauty, as apparent and imperceptible as truth, and I held the moon stare with what felt like an unconquerable determination to not blink first.
This one you call Lady Crown. He has not lost hope, but his vision is grim. The experience relates to all sorts of stories. As he stands like a new pope, serves himself another gin, and breathes away his worries. Leadership is a sad position. It is so official up there that it is especially lonely. The one pointing the direction may send a cord anywhere, but must always inspire might and power. For his people, he cares dearly, even in the darkest hour. So he will accept to become dirty, to remain the lesser evil in power. However tired of his burden, one that only increases as time passes. As wisdom in the horde has no reason, he grows sick of leading the masses. So he steps down, devoid of his best. He leaves the herd behind, ignores duty to get some rest. What remains of him is often, at best, chaos and disharmony, because there is no immaculate will that, in time, power won't fully. The responsibility is his and accepted. For every man is a judge. All consequences, good or ill, are expected. Bliss in praise, hell in grudge. Here is one thing for every man, either a farmer or a king. What matters is not how he comes, but how he's parting. The brighter the man is the man, the darker is the shadow, his captain. His value lies on the side, he's not facing.